is the Rise Up Sea Red podcast, all about the Arizona Cardinals and the NFL, featuring insider and outsider perspectives. Enjoy the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. Now here are your hosts, Jess Root and Seth Cox.
Hello, Arizona Cardinals fans, and welcome to the latest edition of the Rise Up Sea Red podcast. I'm your host, Jess Root from CardsWire.com, the Arizona Cardinals site from the USA Today NFL Wire. Joining me on the line is Seth Cox. Seth Cox, my co-host from RevengeOfTheBirds.com, the Arizona Cardinals site from SB Nation, and also one of the hosts of the original Draft Breakdown podcast. This is episode 351, and it is our free agent review show, which, I mean, Seth and I were joking earlier in the day in our texts about how this might be the shortest show of the year. It's not going to be the shortest show of the year, but the trend for or the theme of free agency for the Cardinals thus far has been one of inactivity. We talked about the NFL Combine last week. If you missed episode 350, we had Justin Higdon. So it was basically Seth and Justin, who are the hosts of the original Draft Breakdown podcast, with me as a guest, as we talked about the Combine, players who stood out, and stuff like that. But we're going to talk about free agency, what's the things been going on with the Cardinals, whom they signed, whom they didn't sign, and what we think's moving forward. Seth, what has been your biggest takeaway thus far to the moves, or better said, lack of moves that the Cardinals have made?
I think it's kind of twofold. One, it's obviously the fandom part of us go, what are you doing or not doing? Like you said, why don't you do something? But I think when you kind of sit back, you take the approach of, all right, well, they had their top two or three targets heading into free agency. We'll talk about those guys and who they were, and they didn't get them, obviously. And instead of panicking and overpaying for the next guys, they've just kind of idly sat by and let the market play out. Now, we don't know if that's going to constitute good or bad or indifferent or other or whatever, but that's where they're taking this as of now. I think from our perspective, especially when you look at how the NFC has kind of fallen a little bit in terms of talent, you look at it and you go, this is, the NFC itself is ripe for the taking. And to see your team sit back and kind of play it close to the vest and kind of take it slow is just a bit jarring to watch it go that way. But I also don't know if they're doing it incorrectly, so to speak. I think outside of two or three guys that we'll discuss, I don't think that they've missed on anybody that they were really going after yet. And I think that there are still secondary guys that they feel comfortable with.
Yeah, and so what we've got so far is the Cardinals have only made two outside signings. They've re-signed or agreed to terms with nine players who were their own free agents and have signed two others. But they've seemingly minor moves. And so for me, there's part of me that, think, obviously they've got to have a plan because they're not going to go into the offseason with no plan, right? The same time, in this critical offseason, with the kind of the press that we've been going through, it's Kyler's last small cap hit, you'd think that they would be more aggressive about, in particular, filling what we perceive as large needs. And especially with the departure, we're going to talk to the Tar Archer. We went into this offseason feeling that their biggest needs were a pass rush, wide receiver, cornerback, and then arguably on the offensive line. And all that's happened at receiver is they've lost they've they've lost two free agents are unsigned. One has left and signed with another team. Their top pass rusher left, leaving a big hole. And they signed a talented unknown at cornerback. They haven't addressed all other moves have been depth and or re-signings. So they have filled some needs. Obviously, James Conner, Zach Ertz, Max Williams, there's been good values there. But the lack of moves at positions of need without acquiring established players raises questions. And, you know, I got on a little bit of a, I don't know if people consider it whining, but it's hard with the perception that we've dealt with this offseason. It's hard to look forward and think optimistically about what this team's prospects are because perceptually, this team hasn't gotten better. It's gotten worse. It lost its top receiver, its top pass rusher, its top cornerback is unsigned. Their best cornerback from a year ago is unsigned. They released one of their defensive captains, their best linebacker from a season ago. And all they've done is added re-signed guys, added depth, and then a question mark at a potentially a starting cornerback. And so you look at how things ended last season and you felt the need that they needed to get better and they haven't yet. And that's the part that's frustrating on top of the fact that there's this perceived drama with Kyler Murray, whether the actual drama is drama or if it's just some, you know, something that we need to talk about that's a little bit of a worry moving forward. It's just, that's the part for me. It's just, it's hard for any fan to be excited at this point. And I know the Cardinals don't have to worry about, like, that their job isn't to worry about whether the Cardinals fans are excited in the offseason. But it's not a good look for a team that's only gotten bad press this offseason. The comments about Kyler Murray, the Kyler Murray delete, you know, Instagram stuff, the talk about him as a leader, the supposed blow up in the offseason with Kyler. But they extend Kyler in Kingsbury, which is, you know, for some is a positive, some is a negative. And then the lack of movement in free agency just makes it hard for fans to believe in this team after they had what was both their most successful year in the last six and most disappointing at the same time because of how things ended.
Yeah, and so, you know, you look at it from a lot of different perspectives, and this is, you know, an interesting season that they go into where you just have, like you said, a lot of questions about the direction of the team. And we felt like signing Kliff and Keim to those extensions should have, if anything, cleared up those questions. And then, you know, people just feel like, and I agree, that the lack of moves in free agency have just continued those questions to be had. So there's just, I think that's the thing, is like you want a definite understanding of where this roster is heading, and it's hard right now to see where that is. But I do think there are a couple things that are going to happen that, you know, as we'll discuss over the next, you know, 45 minutes or so, where the team is looking and what they're probably heading for as we get ready for you know, the 2022 NFL draft right after this.
And let's go ahead in this segment. Let's talk about the two guys that we have heard they wanted. There were two targets that they did not get. One being Hassan Reddick. They wanted to bring him back. Supposedly they were willing to pay him a couple, like 2 years for $24 million, and he ended up getting 3 years, $45 million with a good portion of that guaranteed go to the Eagles.
I could be wrong, but I thought it was 3, 36 and 24 guaranteed, and then he ended up with 3, 45, 30 guaranteed.
Okay, that makes more sense. And when we talked in our preview show, 3 years is perfect for the type of production that we think is going to happen with him over the next few years, because he's proven he's productive, but he does have some physical limitations. So that big 5-year deal would have been out of the question. But, you know, it's disappointing of why they would go lower than that on a guy that's had now 2 years in a row of double-digit sacks. Now, he was streaky in both seasons, of course, but, you know, when he signed with Philly for the 3 and 45, I'm like, dude, I'd have done that deal. That's a deal. That's a value. It's not overpaying, but I get that there's a part. So if the Cardinals had offered the same thing as the Eagles, I think he picks the Eagles because of the history there. Cause he, you know, went to Temple, grew up in Camden. And so,
yeah, I think his home's like 3 miles.
Right.
Where he grew up like 3 miles from where they play. So, I mean, yeah, like you said, you're probably going to have to slightly overpay, probably either more guaranteed or more average per year, or a combination of the two. Here's a question, and I know we'll get to who left, but are you surprised that Hassan got less money than Chandler Jones?
I'm not surprised. Okay. I'm not surprised in part because
I was just surprised to see 17. I think.
You know, Chandler Jones is at this point in his career, he's a legacy player. And he's still productive, so he's got the Pro Bowls. So in terms of negotiations, he's got the Pro Bowls, he's got the double-digit sats, he's got long-term performance, and a physical build, the physical tools that lend itself to lengthened production is courage. He's got that length as well. And so I'm not surprised that he did, because of the reputation he has around the league, even though he had we consider it a down year. That 5-sack performance in week one, I think, really, really stands out. And the fact that he hit double digits, I'm not surprised at all, especially when you compare it to Hassan, who is undersized, has 2 years production. But I think when you look at the physical build, like you got the limitations, yeah, that it makes sense, and the amount that he got, I think was completely fair and actually perfect for him to cash in, one, and two, for the team that is investing in him, because they don't get locked into long-term big money, which will lead to looking like a bad deal in year 4 and 5.
Yeah, and so with Hassan, you know, I'm with you. I would have been comfortable at the $15 million, but as you said, like, and I know fans don't want to hear this, but you're not winning a battle with Philly for a hometown kid. And when you go back and you look at it from that perspective, man, it's tough, right? Like, I get it, but did you want to go 3 and call it 50 and 35?
And
for
that's
him?
Pushing it. That's pushing it a little bit. For me.
And that's the other thing that we have to remember too. 3 years, like you said, if it's a 5-year, $80 million deal, and you know, we wouldn't have been comfortable with that, but if it's a 5-year, $80 million deal, you can push those numbers into years 3, 4, and 5. This deal was, the numbers were going to have to be in year 2 and 3. Right, like with the way the cap set up this year and everything, like you're gonna have to push a lot of that into year 2 and 3. So you're probably only gonna see, you know, a $4 to $5 million cap hit this year. And so it would have been, you know, the last 2 years probably closer to an average of 20 million per year. So that's just another thing to think about when you look at, you know, the cap numbers and things like that. The 315 was probably the most the Cardinals could have afforded to go on, like Jess said, a short-term deal without pushing it to 4 or 5 years to then push out that money a little bit like the Cardinals like to do. I mean, it's disappointing because he would have been here's the thing. Hassan would not have replaced Chandler as a straight up player. But he would have replaced Chandler's ability as a pass rusher.
Absolutely, absolutely.
So you're basically replacing Chandler with Hassan Reddick and Devon Kennard, so to speak, in that situation. And then look, what are you paying them? Well, you're paying them the combined amount of what you would pay one Chandler Jones. So it all makes sense when you really break it down. But, you know, it's hard to be upset not getting him. It's disappointing, but, like, you know, if you look at it from a logic standpoint, the two factors of the money, and then even if you were equal, you're going to have to overpay to make a kid want to play in front of his hometown fans.
Absolutely. And then the other player, I don't remember hearing or seeing this other than within our group. Carlton Davis, who ended up re-signing with the Tampa Bay Bucks, would have solved their cornerback situation. He was an apparent target of the Cardinals, which would have, honestly, very, very talented player. That's a cornerback I would have been willing to pay a lot of money to, and I think would have really, like, then you go into, if you land one of those two players, you're like, yeah, that's a big-ticket free agent, but not the biggest-ticket free agent, and you feel good because of their relative youth that they would help now and later at positions of extreme need.
And something that we've talked about before, investing in
premium positions
and something that they've not really done as much as they should have in the draft. Obviously the two quarterbacks kind of throws off the count a little bit, but it's something that you should be investing in consistently is edge and corner positions, along with obviously the offensive line. But, you know, Davis was a target, and I think just it was one of those situations that it just never came to fruition once Tom Brady decided he was going to come back, because that changed the whole dynamic of what the Buccaneers were doing this offseason. They ended up still losing Alex Kappa, their talented guard, but they ended up bringing back, you know, Ryan Jensen. They franchise tag Chris Godwin, you know, like basically they're getting the band back together for another run. And this season, their belief is partially that they had, you know, two issues in Tampa. Obviously, we all know the Antonio Brown saga, but they dealt with a laundry list of injuries this year. And you know, when we talk about building a team, right, when we talk about the Cardinals and things of that nature, one of the things that we talk about a lot of times is luck, right, and injury luck. And the year before, the Bucs were very, very lucky to be mostly injury-free the year they won the Super Bowl. Then you go back to this year, they struggled with injuries. And so, you know, I think Davis, that, again, I think he got about the same thing, right? 345?
Yeah.
I mean, I had heard the Cardinals were going to offer him 17 a year. Who knows if that's accurate or not. I just know that once Tom came back, everything was off the table.
Right. It was going to be very, very difficult to draw him away from, you know, running it back in Tampa, because they did well last year. I mean, you know.
Yeah, they were still a, you know, division winner. They're still going to be – I mean, there's something to also the idea that if you're Tampa – or even Green Bay, those divisions are really, really weak right now. And they've gotten even weaker. I mean, Matt Ryan's gone now in the NFC South. And so, you know, if you're a player in the going to those areas, you're looking at it partially as, especially Carlton Davis, I believe he's only 24 or 26. He's pretty young, if I remember right. So you sign up your deal, you're going to come out and you're still going to be able to go get another, you know, big contract, something that we've seen with corners like,
this is his year 25 this year.
Yeah. So he's going to be 28. I mean, he's going to come out, right. And he'll be able to cash in again on a, you know, a probably a 3 to 5 year deal for even more money. But so when you look at it from that perspective, you know, they weren't going to be able to compete. And I know fans don't like to hear that. And things of that nature. But that's just, I mean, that's just reality. That there are times when you're just not going to compete with other teams. And we saw it in two separate functions, you know, this year. And then we saw it with, you know, even like you go to the who they lost and you couldn't compete with what those guys got on the open market. So
yeah, those are the two guys that we know this offseason. What's been really interesting is that we don't know what other players they had interested or if there was interest. Like, we knew last offseason before they traded for Rodney Hudson that they went over, they went after the center of the Green Bay they ended up signing with the Chargers. They were in on that bidding. We heard a few things. This offseason, it's been really quiet, which has been, I think, part of the issue is that we don't know if they're targeting players or not. And so let's move on from that. So coming next on the Rise Up Secret podcast, the best R. Cardinals talk on the web. We're going to talk about the Cardinals' losses in particular, talk a little bit about the two players, a couple other players, because they released a couple as well, and how that will affect them moving forward. That's coming next on Rise Up Secret. We're back on the Rise Up Secret podcast, the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. The Cardinals have had four players sign elsewhere. Two that left in free agency, two that they released. The first release was Jordan Hicks. That came as no surprises. If they were going to commit to Zaven Collins, then they couldn't have Jordan Hicks on the roster. And he lands with the Minnesota Vikings on a two-year deal, which is good for him and good for them. They released Jordan Phillips, which was largely expected because of the cap hit in the production. It's a June 1st designation, so the Cardinals will get $10 million in cap relief, but not until after June 1st. And so they will not realize those cap savings till later. But he re-signed with the Bills, the team where he had that amazing historical 2019 season with 9.5 sacks. Those guys were players that we were anticipating them losing. They have lost two productive players in free agency. The first was Christian Kirk. Now, we probably didn't, like, we could have seen him coming back, but we felt there he's probably going to price himself out. Did you ever foresee Kirk getting the money he got, the $17 million per year average with the Jacksonville Jaguars? First of all, congratulations, Christian Kirk. That is an amazing deal. You deserve every penny of it, but and largely around the league, no one thinks that that's a good deal.
No, and I talked to my buddy that covers them, and we discussed it. We were discussing it, and he just flat out told me, he goes, "You're going to be shocked by these numbers." And I, you know, I was like, "Oh wow, he's going to get $15 million a year," because you and I had discussed with in our group text, you know, what was 13, 14. We knew the Cardinals would be in around 11 or 12, but, you know, but we also had heard that it wasn't going to happen because, you know, he was going to get more. And so we were thinking, you know, what was he going to get? I think the day that the announcement came out, we had even predicted, somebody had predicted 14, somebody had predicted 13. And then one person predicted 15. None of us. None of us saw 17 coming.
Well, and, right? And not just 17 a year, it is 5 years.
Right. So, you know, it's crazy. And so,
or was,
you know,
it, was it, yeah, 4 years? Was it 4 or 5?
No, it's 4 years. Cause it's
okay. That's crazy, but good for him. And honestly, with what the Jaguars have been doing, It's they're doing smart things. Again, they're throwing money around that perhaps not smartly, but they are acquiring players to make them better. And right. Christian Kirk is the right type of player to bring into that organization. He works extremely hard. Now, is he going to be a number one receiver? I mean, we haven't seen that. He's shown flashes of it, but
I can tell you that the expectation is he's going to be their number one.
And good for him. We'll see how that and how consistent exactly he can be about that.
Exactly. And so, you know, and they're paying him like it. So, I mean, you know, they're And, you know, realistically, it's really just a 2-year, $40 million deal for him. And then they've got outs after that. So, you know, if he doesn't produce like they expect, and I would assume produce like they expect means at least a Pro Bowl type of receiver.
Yeah.
You know, they'll likely, you know, move on. But yeah, that was unexpected. Honestly, you and I were hoping to get like a fourth round comp pick for him. So to see him basically get a third round comp pick with a bullet was a little jarring right off the bat.
Absolutely.
We did not expect that.
No. And then they go on to lose Chandler Jones, who signs a 3-year, $51 million, another $17 million a year, but for an established pass rusher, over to the Las Vegas Raiders. It was just a couple of weeks ago we were talking about, oh, poor Raiders, because of what was happening in the AFC West. And then they go and they go and trade for Davante Adams. They sign Chandler Jones. They re-up Max Crosby. And they are every bit a player in the AFC West, even with Derek Carr, because they have added talent. That offense, because their offensive line was good. Now take a look at who they've got. So they got Davante Adams, they got Darren Waller, they got Josh Jacobs. That is a talented team. Now they add Chandler Jones to be paired with Max Crosby. You know, we can say that he is diminishing in some, but if he's going to be opposite Max Crosby, I don't think there's any reason why we can't expect to see 2-3 more years of double-digit sack production, which is, and you know, he's looking to become one of the best pass rushers ever. That's a good move for him. And schematically, well, it's going to work for him.
And that was one of the things I was going to say is, you know, Chandler was very vocal about a couple of things. And, you know, I think at the end of the day, he found a happy medium. I had heard that his biggest offer had come from the New York Jets. Whether or not that's true, you know, who knows, but I'd heard that they had offered him $18 million a year. So, you know, $3 million more over the course of 3 years. So, you know, for Chandler, I think the rhetoric of playing for a championship was a little stronger. I think he still wanted to be respected and paid. I don't think he wanted to go spend his last productive years in a situation like the Jets. So I think he found the happy medium of a team like the Raiders.
And he does have familiarity with the coaching staff. So he's worked with Josh McDaniels and Patrick Graham, and the fact that being paired but opposite that, Max Crosby is fantastic for him.
I think that was a big thing for him. And when he talks about the schematic fit, I think that's part of it. I really do think that he would have taken more of a shine to the Cardinals if, like, Hassan Reddick had been re-signed last year, right? Like, to a 3 or 4 year deal last year. And so he was still in the fold. But I think Chandler is, to your point, he's very cerebral about things. And he saw the writing on the wall that in Arizona, if I'm the guy, if I'm the number one guy, you know, 10 sacks may be my ceiling. Exactly. You know, I may be a guy that isn't able to produce like he wants to at the end of his career, because that's the thing. Remember, like, these guys like Strahan and Kevin Green and those guys, they got to be kind of pass rush specialists at the end of their career.
Well, and since he, as we mentioned earlier, one of the reasons why he got the big deal is because of the respect he has around the league, you know, got the Pro Bowls. We know how Pro Bowls go. You have to get to a Pro Bowl first before you can continue to get Pro Bowls. And then as long as you're a productive player at your position, you will continue to get that love. And now in the AFC, because he has that cachet of respect around the league, if he puts up 12 sacks next year, he'll probably be a Pro Bowler again.
Right, exactly. And so, like, I think to your point, like, the Max Crosby being across from him, a guy that is a, you know, threat to be kind of a real number one, is important to him, because it takes some of the pressure off of Chandler, and they just quite frankly, never did that for him here. You know, I know bringing in JJ was supposed to help with that, but we knew JJ was kind of not the same guy that he was before. And so,
and they didn't end up using him on the edges either. They used him strictly on the interior.
And so we'll see, you know, we'll see if the plan works out for Chandler, or if, you know, or if he finessed the Raiders. I mean, that's one of the situations. And we know the Cardinals wanted him back, but we know it was at a cost probably similar to the $15 million a year that Hassan got, and they weren't really going to go over that. And like I said, I think as much as maybe being cheap is being thrown around, and yeah, they probably could have offered an extra couple million, I really do think that a lot of these guys are looking at, especially, you know, you're looking at Christian Kirk, that's probably the payday he's going to get, right? Like, that's going to be the best chance to have this, you know, get a $40 million in guaranteed money. That's probably Chandler Jones's last chance to cash in at $51 million, but also probably the best chance he's going to have to throw another 35 to 40 sacks on his overall resume in a 3-year span. You know, whereas with the Cardinals, even if they signed him to the exact same deal, he's probably looking closer to 25 to 30 sacks. So you're talking another, you know, you're talking 10 to 15 more sacks over those 3 seasons, just because they've got another pass rusher in house. Now, that doesn't mean the Cardinals wouldn't have tried to add another pass rusher, but the devil, you know, knowing that Max Crosby is already a dynamic pass rusher, it's a lot less to worry about for Chandler.
Coming up next on the Rise Up Sea Red podcast, the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web, we're going to move on and talk about the re-signings. The Cardinals have brought back a number of important players, important and complimentary players. We'll discuss those moves coming up next on the Rise Up Sea Red. We're back on the Rise Up Sea Red podcast, the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web, and the Cardinals have made a lot of moves. They've made a lot of moves. It's just most of them have not been all that exciting, except for the first couple of days. Their two big moves in free agency have honestly been their own players. When they re-signed tight end Zach Ertz and running back James Conner, both to 3-year deals that were lucrative for them. Zach Ertz remains a top 10 paid tight end in the NFL, averaging more than $10 million a year, and James Conner gets 3 years and $21 million. I think both were important, and we talked about this before. If there were two skill players that we felt that the Cardinals would focus on, it would be those two players. Zach Ertz, because, you know, the rapport he had with Kyler Murray and the production he had in 11 games, he tied the franchise record for receptions by a tight end. I will say this, that is an indictment on the Cardinals' tight end position over their history. But this, like you probably say, he's probably going to have a record-setting season for the position. And James Conner, if you were looking at James Conner, I forgot to talk about Chase Edmonds. Oh my gosh, they lost Chase Edmonds too, and we didn't even discuss him at all in the last segment. But I completely forgot about for Edmonds. They did lose Chase Edmonds to the Miami Dolphins, and he got 2 years, $12 million. And the James Conner they kept, and we said if we had to pick one or the other, I felt Conner was the guy to pick because he brings something different. And
yeah, his skill set was harder to
replicate because he the ability to both make plays in the open field, catch the ball, run with power. You've got a guy who is probably not as good as Chase Edmonds, but the frame and the skill set is much more replaceable with Edmonds, and that might be, you know, Benjamin this year, a guy that Cardinals fans have been waiting to do stuff. But I, you know, some will say that Cardinals overpaid for Conner, that no one in the league was going to give him that much money. The 3 years, $21 million, is essentially 2 years, $18 million, and basically all of that is guaranteed because of the way the contract is structured. Not his full salary in 2023 is not guaranteed, but because they're paying him like $500,000 as a roster bonus, and the $500,000 of his salary that season is guaranteed, it's not like they're going to cut him and pay him $500,000 to not be on the team. So basically, he's going to get $16 million and change over 2 years, and then there's a third year that makes it a really easy out because the salary goes down that year, and the signing bonus wasn't too bad. Did you have any issues at all with the two deals that they made with Ertz and Connor?
You know, I was surprised what Ertz got, but not overly surprised based off the what was it called? The franchise tag numbers. Cause Dalton Schultz and Mike Gesicki getting franchise tag and David Njoku. Like, why didn't you guys just go pay Zach Ertz? I don't know. Once all those guys got franchise tagged, I wasn't surprised, but I thought it was going to be a little lower, but I mean, they ended up getting Max for a steal.
Absolutely. So. And what I like about these two moves as well is because those are guys that Kyler Murray will go to war with those guys. They proved themselves. They were the two players outside of Kyler that made any sorts of plays in the second half of the season. They carried the offense, essentially. And you get that back next year with DeAndre Hopkins, which is going to be fantastic. I liked the moves. Obviously, Zach Ertz is on the back end of his career, so you wonder about how long the production will go, and particularly the tight end part of things where he has to block. Connor's, there's a little bit of durability history, but as long as they have someone complimentary, it will work. The next guy they re-signed was quarterback.
Real quick.
Go for it.
I just wanted to say, we missed on Chase Edmonds. And yeah, I'll just say this real quick. One, allegedly they had two contracts out. They had a contract for both Connor and Edmonds, and Connor chose it first. And so they pulled back Edmonds' contract offer, which is, I mean, it makes sense. You couldn't sign both of them and be paying them roughly, $13 million a year, let's just say. The second thing is this. You and I are big Chase Edmonds fans. He's one of the guys that's closest on the team to Kyler Murray as well. But this, he is a guy that every time it seemed like the switch flipped and he was ready to produce, he got injured. And it was always just little nicked up things. And for that reason, that's why I was more okay with James Conner than Chase Edmonds overall.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Colt McCoy comes back 2 years, $7.5 million. I think that's right around the numbers that we would have been comfortable with, and maybe a little bit more, but
And that's a huge deal. I think that is a spectacular re-signing. It's good for Colt. He's going to make another, let's call it $8 million before he retires, or signs one more, Drew Stanton type contract with the Cardinals. Right. But so I'm really happy for him. Honestly, I really am.
And we felt he's the perfect backup for here for a number of reasons, because of the respect that he already came into because Kyler watched him be a stud in Texas football. He proved himself to his coach on the field. And basically, like what we talked about earlier in the season, he basically earned, long-term backup status like Drew Stanton did. By winning two out of those three games, I mean, if as long as Cliff's here and as long as Colt's willing to play, he's probably going to be the backup. We've been waiting for years for Case Keenum to be that guy. Case Keenum hasn't made his way here, and I think Colt has earned that spot. Dennis Gardeck, the next guy that was added, a 3 years, $12 million deal. A little bit surprising, but not too much. Do you think that was too much for Gardeck?
No, not based on what they want to see him become. So I think that's the main thing. Is they're paying him for what he is, a special teams ace, $2.5 million. That's about what you would pay a guy like him. That's truly a Pro Bowl special teamer. And then you're paying him that extra $1.5 million with this idea of like he might become a a really good pass rusher in the NFL.
The downside is that obviously this last year it was so untimely when he tore his ACL, because then you didn't get to see, because last year, now the knee was fine, but we know how ACLs go. You're not gonna really get everything back until about a year and a half, and he probably got his legs under him about mid-season, and you know he just didn't have the production. He had impact, but he didn't finish. But it would be fantastic. Now he's probably, because of his size, he is definitely undersized. He's probably not going to be anything more than a package rusher. But if he's an ace special teamer and he fits their NASCAR package, where he's an edge rusher but actually rushes kind of from the inside, it's perfect. It's a perfect deal as long as he does get some pass rushing production.
Right, exactly. And so, you know, I know you wrote about how the contract's laid out. I didn't pay attention to what it was exactly. But, you know, as long as they're not paying $12 million a year for a special teamer, they're in a good spot.
They added Michael Dogby, basic one-year deal, minimum contract. This would have been his fourth season had he been on the roster the entire time as he was drafted as a seventh round pick. I like the addition. He's going to be a rotational guy, and he's improved a little bit each year. So this year could be this year. I'd love to see him get more of the 25% snaps and get some production instead of a active sometimes with 10 snaps and inactive other times. But it would, because he's a guy I've loved since he was drafted. You know, those the type of mentality with which he plays. He's the guy that you want on the back end of that rotation, because you're not going to lose any effort, and like there's athleticism too.
Yeah, and the contract also makes it. I mean, and not to be negative,
you're going to be paying someone a minimum salary,
right? But the contract also makes it like, hey, we drafted Devontae Wyatt right in the first round. Everybody's healthy going out of camp. Okay, sorry, Michael, you're the guy that gets cut. And then, you know, when Zach Allen or Rashard Lawrence or Lucky Fotu hit a 2-3 game injury skid, it's like, hey, Michael, we need you back.
Yeah.
And so like that's the perfect contract for him, because like you said, he's a guy you don't mind being on the field, but he's also a guy that like, hey, okay, we upgraded, we can bring him back when we need to, if we need to, type of thing. It's literally perfect for him, for the Cardinals and him.
Max Williams, this for me, I think this might be the best contract that they had, because they get Max Williams back, who is still in the prime of his career in terms of age and physique.
He's only 27, right?
Right, he is. He's going to be 28. He seems like he's been in the year, right? But we felt that, and his, you know, his projected market value was, what was it, about $6 million? And he comes back on a minimum deal where he's going to get about $1.25 million, and only going to count $900,000 against the cap as a veteran salary benefit. And that's the best deal that they've made, because now I'm going to say it. I think with these, with Ertz and Williams, they have the best duo of tight ends that the Cardinals have had in Arizona since Rob Awalt and Jay Novacek, and those guys hadn't really emerged at all. They eventually were pretty, like, Jay Novacek was fantastic with the Cowboys. Awalt was also fairly productive. There were high hopes for him. But the Cardinals have not had a 1-2 punch of tight ends that have been this good, I don't think, ever. And
no, I would 100% agree with that.
And it's going to be interesting to see how they're used, because with both of them, and I know Max not making that much money, you feel like they're almost like Cliff is changing his base philosophy, because you've got two tight ends, you've got a big back in James Conner, and they don't really have any receivers. Honestly, I don't know if we will see 10 personnel hardly at all this year, because they're not going to take Ertz off the field, and I think they're going to use a lot of 12 personnel. And so maybe the lack of receiver targeting in free agency is because maybe we're going to see a slight shift in how they run the offense next year.
Yeah, possibly could be. And you know, the names, even the names that we've heard mentioned here and there, it's not like, any of those guys are going to move the needle to the point where you're like, hey, let's get a Max Williams off the field. You know what I'm saying? Like, it's not like we were hearing they were going to go get Davante Adams, right? Like, or even an Allen Robinson. Like, at the end of the day, some of the names we've heard and we'll, you know, bring up at the end are guys that are good football players, excellent receivers, but they're guys that, as you said, maybe the idea is that you've got, you know, Zach and Max with Rondell outside and Hop outside. And so you're going, you know, too tight, too wide, single back, and then, you know, your five linemen and your quarterback. And maybe that's what they're looking at as their base more. And then when they do bring in a guy, it'll bring, like, hey, we're going to take Max off the field here, and slide, you know, Rondell into the slot and then put one of these guys out wide.
They also brought back their special teams battery, long snapper Aaron Brewer, punter Eddie Lee. That just makes sense based on what they want to accomplish this year. Matt Prater was nearly unstoppable when both of those guys were on the field with him, and less impressive when they weren't.
Right.
And then they brought back Zeke Turner as well.
Another core special teamer
who, you know, what I like about him as depth on defense is, because he is a former defensive back, he played safety at Washington, and we've seen it kind of in training camp and in the preseason, if there's ever a time where Simmons comes out,
Zeke
can do some of the same things. Not at the same level, but he has the same sort of coverage skills.
Right. He's a 75% Simmons, and that's fine for, you know, three to six plays a game, basically. And I was going to say about Brewer and Andy Lee, and we talked about this in our move show, and we did talk about potentially cutting Matt Prater. As soon as they didn't cut Matt Prater, they basically had to bring these guys back, right? Like, you didn't want the train wreck of not having these guys that we saw. Like you said, Prater was literally an all-pro kicker when those guys were there. He was who's the guy that he was Chandler Catanzaro when they weren't there. So.
Well, in fairness, is that there were issues with almost every single one of those snaps or holds.
No, and I get that, and that's the thing. Is like maybe you bring in a snapper or a punter, but at the same time, it's like these guys already have their flow, they have their philosophy, they've got their rapport with one another. Like, let's just leave it as is. It's not like those positions are cash strapping you, because the only one that's really cash strapping you is Prater.
Right. Because Lee gets $1.5 million. It's straight up. Half his salary is guaranteed, which means he's going to be the punter this year.
Barring injury, he's your punter.
And we haven't seen Brewers, but I'm imagining it's probably going to be right around him. It's going to be near the vet minimum, maybe $1.5 million. So it's a slightly more than the vet minimum.
I was going to guess he'll get another 1.25. I think that's what he's been at the last couple seasons.
And that's a nice life, honestly. It's a good life.
Yeah. I keep trying to tell my 16-year-old he's a really good long snapper. I'm like, dude, do that for 15 to 18 years, and then go do whatever you want after that.
So in the side note, and this is on the part where I work, the school I work at, is there's a guy who teaches there, who coaches there. He was the long snapper for the Bengals for 11 years, and his son is long snapping and just got offered by I think Texas, and you know, we got that sort of pedigree. He's probably gonna be playing on Sundays like his dad did for a decade.
Yeah, and that's the thing. It's like, exactly, the people don't understand that these niche things are there in sports. You know,
you got to be good though, obviously.
Yeah, you obviously have to be talented and work really hard at it, but there are these, you know, opportunities available, and you know, there's a reason that Aaron Brewer's been around for 11 seasons or 12 seasons now, whatever it is. And because when you're reliable, they don't want to go try to find somebody else.
It's because remember what the Cardinals tried, like back in 2016 when they had Cameron Kanadate, that the undrafted rookie,
who actually ended up being really good. For
he
the
did,
Pittsburgh
but
Steelers.
That rookie year he wasn't, and so replacing Mike Leach was really hard, and it ended up going through a couple of them before they ended up on Brewer, and he's been there. He's been here ever since 2016, and it's been good. It's been good. Coming up next on the Rise of Secret Podcast, the best of Cardinals talking about the Cardinals have made two moves outside of their own teams. We'll talk about the additions of Jeff Gladney and Nick Vigil. That's coming up next on Rise of Secret. We're back on the Rise of Secret Podcast, the best of Cardinals talk on the web. There's not a lot to talk about, but there have been two. And that's kind of been the joke. So the Cardinals made one move. They added Jeff Gladney, an interesting addition. He gets a 2-year, $6.5 million deal.
Do you think the basically getting 2 years, $6.5 million guaranteed was because they had competition for him?
I think so. But what's interesting is that's how they addressed the cornerback position, because he lines up as probably your starting cornerback. And that's as talented, like, I know they liked him in the draft. I remember I was looking up with the Cardinals. He was one guy that they had a private workout with in 2020 before the draft. And he ends up he gets drafted 31st overall to the Minnesota Vikings. He plays the entire year. Not great, but he's productive. He's physical. He's not long. Like that's the thing that's interesting, is that they're going with physical instead of long. And maybe they see him like a younger Robert Alford. And
yeah, that's one of his actual player comps.
And what's interesting is the fact that, you know, he was out of football for a year because he was charged and indicted with assault against his then girlfriend. It's some pretty bad stuff. He was acquitted by a jury, which cleared up any legal stuff. But then it was almost immediately the Cardinals added him. And so he's a low cost starting corner, but not having played for a year and having just his rookie season, that when you're going in a year two, Marco Wilson, year four, Byron Murphy, to not add any veterans to that room right now, it's very interesting how they're approaching the cornerback position.
Yeah, it is. You know, you look at it, Gladney's a physical. The word you hear a lot used about him is pesky. Like, he's an irritant, and that's a good thing for corners. The off-the-field situation, look, Jess and I always say this. Once the legalities are done, we kind of just then go by the player, and that's not, you know, at the end of the day, that's all we can do. Whether or not you agree with the team signing him or not, that's your business at that point. But when you look at the player himself, just the player on the field, like Jess said, his rookie season was a bit of a struggle. And that's not uncommon, right? Like, that's not uncommon to see that for a rookie. And then his season got better as it went along. Obviously, last year didn't play at all. Again, is what it is. Nothing we can do about that. But when you look at who he was that season, you saw a guy that was beginning to learn how to play. He was beginning to learn the nuances of the NFL. And he was beginning to learn how to compete against guys that are just high-level athletes. You saw him have a really good game, you know, at the end of the season against Detroit when they still had Kenny Golladay. You had him have a really good game against Chicago. I believe Allen Robinson was on that team when he and he was defending him. He had a good game against, you know, the eventual champs, Tampa Bay, in coverage. You know, those are the things you look at. And then, and you look at it, you know, he struggled against teams like Dallas, and he you know, he had a bad game against Green Bay. I mean, is that shocking? So, you know, you look at it from that perspective, and you see a guy that got better. I think he was misused a little bit in Minnesota. And so I think for that, when you look at him, you look at a guy that, if used correctly as a press guy, who, yeah, he's not ideal size and length, but the way he plays, he is a guy that can play in press coverage. He can play, he can do a nice job, you know, as a tackler, and those things all matter and were something that the Cardinals needed. And then obviously the youth is a nice thing. 25 years old, he'll be 26 by the end of the season. So ideally you've got him for 2 years, and then, you know, I would guesstimate if he plays really well this year, he'll probably end up getting re-signed again by the Cardinals.
Yeah, very possible.
To an extension.
And what you like with this trio now is, if you're looking at Gladney as a younger Robert Alford type player, Alford was fantastic. And what you get from all three of your cornerbacks now, which you had last year, is physicality. Marco Wilson, physical. Byron Murphy, he's very willing to he is a tackler. Now, the question is, and we'll talk about the next, is that they got to do something else, right? you can't go into camp as just those three guys as your starters and nobody else. That's the only thing, is the question there. The second signing, and this came on Tuesday, as we're recording on a Tuesday night. Of all the signings that I was surprised at, it was Nick Vigil, who is a veteran inside, well, veteran off the ball linebacker, played for the Bengals, played for the Chargers, played for the Vikings last year. Cardinals fans, you might remember Nick Vigil as the guy who picked off Kyler Murray in week two in that second half, had that pick six. That was probably his highlight of the year. He had 80-something tackles last year. He's had as many as 111 tackles. He's versatile. He gives you starting. But if you're replacing, I kind of like I like the move as a depth move, because if you're going to commit to Zaven Collins and Isaiah Simmons, you do want someone behind him. For injury purpose, you always like to have some depth, veteran depth, who's had starting experience. And if Jordan Hicks was going to be on the team, he was always going to play against ahead of Zaven. Vigil, who comes in as a new guy, who has both been a starter and been a rotational guy, he hedges that. So if one of those two guys gets hurt, he can play. If, you know, if they move Isaiah around, he can play. You feel he's a better option as that third linebacker than Tanner Vallejo, for example. Not that, because Vance Joseph, the Cardinals have loved what they've gotten out of Tanner Vallejo, but you'd have to think that based on Nick Vigil's career, he's a better option. And we'll probably, we don't know the numbers yet. It's a 1-year deal. I would expect it to be not more than about $1.75 million. I would doubt that they would that they would end up signing a guy like Vigil, who's going to be their depth, to cancel out one of their potential comp picks.
Yeah, and that's what you look at now. When do the picks stop counting for comp picks? I was going to ask you that.
After May 1st. May 1st.
Okay, so it's a while.
It is. Still. It is.
Yeah, and I don't see them going after anybody, you know, to speak about Vigil, you know, anybody that's going to affect that Chandler Jones fifth-round comp pick and that third-round comp pick for Christian Kirk. Now, the fifth-round comp pick has nothing to do with Jones's salary. It's just the max you can get with a guy with a decade of service or more in the NFL. So that's a little nougat that not all of us were aware of before the Jones signing. But even then, you don't want that chance that it'll cancel out in that theory. So you'll probably see them stick to $12 million and below, I would assume, on any type of contract offers for free agents.
Yeah.
That they can get. You know, and so Vigil fits that. He's better than Hicks as a coverage guy and a blitzer and worse against the run. I mean, so take for that what you will.
But yeah,
they couldn't really get worse against the run, so I don't think adding Vigil is going to change.
Yeah, the only thing, like my reaction, I think, oh, they signed a player in a position they don't need. Obviously, it's a good signing, I think, especially if the contract comes in at $1.5 to $1.75 million to get veteran depth who can play a starting. You can get starting caliber production. That's fantastic. It just, you know, the disappointment comes is that when you see a signing, it's not at any of the positions that you think they need. They need a receiver, they need a pass rusher. You know, we've been talking about them needing an offensive lineman. We've been talking about them needing another cornerback. It doesn't address any of those positions, and it addresses a position where they already have their starters filled. So, as a depth, it's a fine start. Disappointing at this point? Absolutely, because there's no flash, there's no... It's just... And for us, there's no content. What are you going to talk about Nick Vigil for?
Yeah, and that's the thing is, I mean, Vigil's a nice guy. He's a good backup in the NFL. He's basically the Colt McCoy of linebackers.
Hey, let's put it that way. That sounds good. And we like Colt McCoy. Everyone likes Colt McCoy. All right, so coming up next on the Rise Up Secret Podcast, the best of our Cardinals talk on the web, we will wrap up talking about what should or what could be coming in the offseason in free agency still, since, you know, the Cardinals haven't done much. What's coming next? That's coming up next on Rise Up Secret. We're back on the Rise Up Secret Podcast, the best of our Cardinals talk on the web. You know, the Cardinals have not done anything to address the pass rush, the receiver, the offensive line. They have filled needs. They took care of the running back position. They've more than taken care of the tight end position. They've taken care of backup quarterback. They took care of special teams. They brought back almost all of their core special teamers. We're going to see what happens with like guys like Charles Washington and Chris Banjo.
Those guys usually come back in, like, I think it's June.
Yeah, they'll be later, maybe April, June, just to see what's out there first. They're the glass guys that they end up signing. I don't know if Banjo will be back. I would expect probably Charles Washington. It also depends on what they view out of James Wiggins, whom they drafted this last year. But what do you see seeing? What do you see happening between now and the draft when it comes to free agency? Are they going to stand pat at offensive line at right guard? I mean, that's the one position we thought that they might try to upgrade, and they haven't. Now, granted, they've got Josh Jones. And they've got Justin Murray returning. Max Garcia is a free agent. I mean, they could run it back with those guys, but didn't you think that they were going to do something more?
You know, so we talked about at the beginning of the show, they had this idea with Hassan Reddick and Carlton Davis. I don't know if they would have signed both. Like, let's just say that Hassan agreed. Do you think they would have signed two guys? I think they would have only signed one, but, you know, what do I know? And so I think when you look at it, you wrote a little bit about it today, the names aren't sexy that are left. And I think that's what bothers a lot of people. You know, you look at it, you've got the best name available still as like an edge is Jadeveon Clowney. Clowney's got, I think, a $25 million. Thank you. Dollar deal on the table from Cleveland right now. He's weighing that. You know, and so when people look at that, would you go over that for Clowney? Would you go 2 years, $28 million to sign him?
Or do 2 years, 26, increase the guarantees?
Yeah.
I honestly, at least for edge, I think so. Because that's a premium position, and you're getting, like, he is a premium player. He's not the best. Like, he was productive as a pass rusher last year. in 9 sacks.
Here's the thing.
And he's an elite run defender.
Right. He's going to 100% make their run defense better. He is going to, I mean, he's going to straight up be better than Chandler Jones at that situation. He's going to get 6 to 8 sacks because that's all he is. I mean, there's nothing wrong with that. That's good. That's more than what they have. And so, you know, then you look at it. I like Trey Flowers from Detroit. You know, he's coming off a big, so he might be a guy that's willing to do a 1-year type of deal. You know, you go down a little further in terms of edge. You know, Derek Barnett's been a...
Everything else is a big question mark. If they want to go younger, because, and that seemed to be something, like, part of the reason they were willing to move on Chandler is to get younger. And they didn't get Hassan, but all the younger guys are big question marks. Like, McKinley hasn't done anything in his career, but granted, he's never... His size lends itself more to a 3-4 outside backer, but the fact that he hasn't, in those nickel situations, been productive. You've got Derek Barnett. You've got Arden Key for the 49ers last year. He's an intriguing guy. I thought Dante Fowler would have been a perfect match because he thrived in the Wade Phillips system in Los Angeles, and he signed with the Cowboys. But, you know, you're getting major question marks if you're going with the younger guys. And they're probably and in some ways, like with Devon Kennard restructuring his deal to go down to the minimum, I felt Kennard was a super addition to the Cardinals. It just hasn't worked out. You know, if you use him as a base and you can sign one of these younger guys that can flash as a situational guy in the pass rush, that's not bad. I mean, it's a good lower cost way to piece together your defense. But it's certainly not sexy at all.
Yeah, and you know, you look at, like I said, the youngest kind of high profile name after Clowney would probably be Flowers, and you know, he's a guy that he's going to be 29 this year, so young is, you know, relatively speaking.
Same as Clowney, who's 29.
Yeah, and he's played 14 games total last 2 years. So again, maybe at the end of the day, if the draft doesn't unfold the way you want it to, I'm going to wager he's going to still be available, because I'm going to guess people are kind of scared off by him. You know, like I said, the last 2 years you've played in 14 games and you have 3.5 sacks. Like, that's not a guy. And remember, he got like a $90 million contract
right
from the Lions. So that's not a guy. You know, Arden Key's interesting. I don't know if he fits, and Tack McKinley, same type of thing. I think those guys are interesting. I don't know if they're worth, you know, anything more than, like we said, like a May kind of throw out the wall type of thing. I know guys want wide receivers. We've heard rumblings that they were interested in Odell Beckham Jr.
The injury just makes it really hard, because you're going to get almost nothing out of him.
Well, and it makes me wonder if, like, kind of your hypothesis is right about the changing of the offense, because then you bring in Odell as kind of that outside deep threat guy, and you can ease him into the offense, and you're not looking for him to just kind of be the guy in the offense, right? And so other names that have come up are Will Fuller and who's the kid out of Green Bay, that's name's escaping me. Marquez Valdez
Scantling. Then there's the exciting name of Julio Jones, is kind of like your AJ Green, only that durability is an issue. But AJ Green had a fantastic year. You know that Hop would love to have Julio as a teammate. The fact he missed all those games last year makes it questionable. Heck, you could bring back AJ Green, but there's nothing exciting out there. Like,
no, and to be fair, there really wasn't. I mean, when Christian Kirk is the highest paid free agent, you know, I do wonder if you could maybe go after like a Kenny Golladay in a trade situation, depending on what the Giants do, like if they end up using one of their picks on a wide receiver. But I mean, for the most part, yeah, again, wide receiver, you're looking at, I mean, you're looking at guys that are going to be outside kind of threats. that are upgrades over AJ Green. And you look at the list, and like I said, Odell, okay, yeah, maybe in the back half of the season.
Will Fuller.
Marquez Valdez. I mean,
Emmanuel Sanders, like, he's old, but he can still do a little bit. Keelan Cole has some size, but, you know.
Cole was an interesting one to me because he had a nice little career going in Jacksonville, right? And then I think he got injured, didn't he? Oh, no, he went to New York this last season. Okay, that's right. That's why he fell off the face of the earth, because he went to Zach Wilson. So, but, I mean, you look at him, like, in reality, like, you look at Keelan Cole, right? So
he averaged 16 yards a catch.
Right. He's 16 yards a catch. You look at his first year, he averaged almost 18 yards a catch. Like, that's what you're looking for from him. When he was asked to kind of be, a bigger presence in the lineup, he's not great. But, you know, if you get a similar year to what you got in 2020 with Jacksonville, where you're talking about 55 receptions, over 600 yards and 5 touchdowns, like, that's not a bad deal.
No, that's for AJ had 54 catches on the year. If you can get that average up, like with AJ, get those big plays down the field, that you feel good.
So, and then, you know, we go to the defensive line. I know that's been a bugaboo for a lot of people. Again, I had heard that they were interested in the kid that went to – where did Fatakasi end up? Did he end up in Jacksonville too?
I think that sounds right.
I'm looking real quick. Sorry. Yeah, he did. Holy cow.
They had all the money.
So when he got 10 – so I – you know, I had heard that they had had some interest in him, but at $10 million a year, I knew that was never going to happen, because you're talking about a guy that you're hoping plays 45% of the snaps. Like, that's a good season if he plays 45% of the snaps.
Eddie Goldman makes it an intrigue. You got one of the guys that was cut. You know, the Cardinals are trying to protect those comp picks. That's a good thing to do. Goldman was cut.
Another Bear, Akeem Hicks, I think could make some sense for that.
Linval Joseph. Old, yep. But you can do some of the same things that you do, especially since, you know, you're going to count on J.J. Watt. You're going to count on Zach Allen. You've got Rashard Lawrence that they really like, but then you don't have any, there's no veterans at all. And so whether it's Corey Peters, you could bring in like a Joseph, you could bring in, Ioannidis would be fantastic as well.
I think he signed, but Star Lotulelei is out there as well. I'm pretty sure Ioannidis signed with somebody that was not good. Hold on, let me take a look here. Carolina Panthers, yeah. Yes. Ioannidis would have been the interesting one because he was only 28, right?
Yeah.
But so not shocking that he got scooped up quick because he's 28. But like you said, like there's plenty of time. Like I said, like, you work backwards from age, Linval Joseph, Star Lotulelei, Calais, if he would come back, we don't know. And then you go to a little bit younger guys or Akeem Hicks, who's, you know, still 32. That's really it. When you look at those names, linebackers, I think they're done with that.
The one position that I'm just kind of puzzled is guard. Now, are they going to try and bring in someone Brian Winters like? Winters didn't work out, but he'd been a starter for most of his career. I know they like Justin Murray. I know they're kind of expecting Josh Jones to be better next year, but is that really what you think that they're going to roll into, or that they're going to bring in someone older? I expected that wholeheartedly, that they're going to bring in an older guard that's a fringe starter who could start and be solid or be depth.
And you could do that. You've got guys like Quentin Spain and Ty Turner, both available. They're, you know, on on the wrong side of 30 or heading towards the wrong side of 30. Both those guys are, you know, would make sense because there hasn't been a ton of movement on them right now. I think, you know, a guy like Spain would be interesting. He started 16 games last year for the Bengals, and they've been really kind of keen on upgrading their O-line. So, you know, that's what you have to remember. Is there not a fit because he's not an upgrade? Here's what I'll say, and you and I have talked about it off the air. DJ Humphreys had that light go on after his third year, I believe it was.
Yeah.
Where he started to go work out. Was he with LeCharles too?
He was, yes.
Yeah, so DJ Humphreys went and worked out with LeCharles Bentley and really kind of came into his own after that. I still don't know who it is. And I'm kind of still looking through it. But I've heard that, or we know that Josh Jones is working out with somebody right now. I think he's also working out with LeCharles Bentley. And so that's the thing, is like one of the things that people have to understand right now with the way that the NFL set up, because this is what the veterans wanted, and they didn't want to have long off seasons. They wanted to be able to, you know, not have two-a-days, and they basically wanted to work less. That pulls away from the young guys and the rookies' ability to be taught and time, you know, spent teaching things. And so it falls to the players themselves. And you think, or you're seeing a guy like Jones take that same approach that worked for Humphrey. So we're hoping, and I think the Cardinals are as well, that they'll see that same kind of jump. And if that's their idea, then yeah, maybe even like a Quentin Spain is too rich for their blood, right?
And heck, they might end up just running it back with Max Garcia, a guy that they love him. I mean, and let's, you know, Max Garcia was a Pro Bowl alternate, which is an interesting thing that happened. He was a Pro Bowl alternate. Sean Coogler loves him. And if, you know, if it ends up being that Max has to start half the season, maybe you're not too bad off, because if you have to have him start for 6 to 8 games rather than, you know, 12 to 13, perhaps the level of play remains high.
Yeah, and I think that's a fair thing. And so I know fans wanted a definitive upgrade, but, I mean, they were never going to get Brandon Scherff. And then after that, who are the guards that you're like, this guy is?
What happened with Will Hernandez? I remember raving about him coming out of the draft.
So there's just, he's never really developed into the player, and he's got kind of a, and I think we even saw it when they played the Cardinals, he's got kind of a cheap shot streak that, you know, turns teams off because the juice isn't necessarily worth the squeeze, so to speak. Like, you know, for a Richie Incognito,
because he was coached by Cooler.
Yeah, so you would expect if they you know, wanted him, they could go after him, right?
Yeah,
and you just haven't heard anything. I think his time in New York really set a lot of people on him, which is unfortunate, because coming out, you felt like he was that guy, that next guy, like who's the Joel Bitonio type, right?
Yeah.
And he got drafted in that same range, and he just never turned into it. So, you know, the skills are there. So maybe you go back and you grab him and you see if he turns into one. But for the most part, this isn't a surprise that he's not really been the guy that everybody had hoped to see.
Oh, and with that, you know, that will wrap up this edition of the Rise Up Sea Red podcast. We are going to take next week off, unless there is major news before then. The plan is we will take next week off and then hit the draft throughout April and prepare for that. So We've wrapped up free agency. This is episode 351. We'll be back in 2 weeks. That's Seth Cox. I'm Jess Root. This is the Rise Up Secret Podcast. Thanks for listening, as always.
Thanks for listening to the latest edition of the Rise Up C-Red Podcast. Listen to previous episodes and subscribe to the show on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher Radio, Audioboom, or many other podcast platforms so shows are delivered directly to your mobile device. Please give the show a 5-star rating and always support the sponsors who support the show. We'll be back soon for the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. Rise up, Red Sea, be Red Sea Red, and of course, Rise Up, Sea Red.